world's becoming a dangerous place for us women. Lipstick Bodyguard looks just like an innocent little lipstick, but it'll instantly drop any attacker to his knees so you can get away unharmed. Lipstick Bodyguard, fear no evil. Get yours today, only at lipstickbodyguard.com.
She checked into the hospital for a simple stomach ulcer. Little did she know she would never leave alive. What went wrong? This week on Parents Are Hard to Raise, the dirty little secret hospitals and nursing homes hope you never find out.
Welcome to Parents Are Hard to Raise, helping families grow older together without losing their minds. I'm elder care expert Diane Berardi. On the morning of May 4, 2014, 72-year-old Charlie McMullen of Manhattan Beach, California, would enter the hospital for the treatment of a simple stomach ulcer. She would never leave alive. Hours after her surgery, McMullen spiked a high fever that sent her to the intensive care unit, fighting for her life. On her medical chart, a doctor scribbled CRKP, a cryptic abbreviation for carbapenem-resistant Klebsiella pneumoniae, one of the world's most lethal superbugs. The warning was so dire, the doctor made sure to underline it three times in red. So the doctors tried antibiotic after antibiotic to fight the infection, but after 5 weeks in intensive care, McMullen died. But here's the strange part. Charlie McMullen's death certificate does not mention a word about the deadly infection she caught in the hospital. Instead, her doctor wrote that McMullen had died from, quote, respiratory failure and septic shock caused by her ulcer. Federal health officials call CRKP and other species of drug-resistant pathogens like them one of the nation's most urgent health threats. Yet those same officials acknowledge that many of these deadly infections are going unreported. They are known broadly as HAIs, short for hospital-acquired infections. They're deadly, and they're growing in numbers. And from all accounts, their rising incidence is being swept under the carpet. Because of the danger, the CDC recommends that local health officials require hospitals, nursing homes, rehab facilities, and other institutions like them to report cases of infections. The problem is, many don't comply. It seems like they take that word recommendation with a grain of salt. The CDC has also suggested that local and state public health agencies monitor hospitals and nursing homes for the presence of superbugs like these to make sure that these facilities are trying to stop them before they spread. But when questioned, health officials in the county where McMullen died explained that they had stopped requiring health facilities to report HAIs due to, quote, resource limitations. So let me understand this. This is your only job. You're a local and state public health agency. You're supposed to be protecting the public against these diseases, but you had no resources to do that. So where did this money go? And let me tell you, this whole turning a blind eye to reporting these deadly infections that people get while they're in the hospital or in a nursing home is not as uncommon as we'd like to believe. The fact is, experts are discovering that there's an epidemic of hospital-acquired infections that are going unreported. Wow. Are we surprised? In a 2014 study, the University of Michigan reported that infections, both those acquired in the hospital and outside the hospital, would replace heart disease and cancer as the leading causes of death in hospitals if they base the count not on what the death certificate says, but rather by looking at the patient's medical billing records. So in other words, if you look at the hospital bill and you see, say, $150,000 being billed for IV antibiotics for a patient that supposedly died from a stomach ulcer, that should be a dead giveaway that something's not right here. In 1900, 29 years before Alexander Fleming discovered penicillin, the top three causes of death in America were all the result of infection. Based on what scientists at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Center for Health Statistics are saying, nothing seems to have changed very much in the past 120 years. Infections are still the leading cause of death in the world, and in the elderly population, the problem is even worse. Current statistics in the United States show that 90% of all reported deaths from HAIs occur among seniors age 65 and over. 90%. And that's just the ones we know about. But as I just said, according to doctors at the CDC, that number is likely much, much worse. In March of this year, the CDC estimated that the actual number of deaths from sepsis were as much as 140% higher than those recorded on death certificates, or as many as 381,000 deaths a year. According to another study, 37% of hospitalizations for sepsis were caused by infections caught in hospitals or other healthcare facilities like nursing homes. So what does that say? That's suggesting that as many as 140,000 Americans are dying each year from healthcare-acquired sepsis, which is just one subgroup of all hospital-acquired infections. The common term for sepsis is blood poisoning. Sepsis can cause death when an infection spreads to the blood, triggering an inflammatory response that damages the body's organs and causes them to fail. Although on her death certificate, the official cause says COPD, sepsis, likely acquired from the rehab facility she was in, was the thing that really killed my mother-in-law. Now, my mother-in-law was a registered nurse, and my husband is an infectious disease specialist. Yet, she acquired this disease. Where? In the rehab facility. Infections know no boundaries, and they can slip in undetected. All it takes is a pathogen and a careless healthcare worker to cause an institution-wide epidemic. And that's made all the worse when doctors are encouraged by the institutions they work for to cover up the problem by fudging the death certificates. In the case of Charlie McMullen's death certificate, the doctor who treated her in the ICU and filled out her death certificate said she was following directions from health officials by recording the underlying cause of death, which in her opinion was the perforated ulcer. Her rationale for fudging? Here it is in her own words, and I'm quoting here. "Everything that happened to Miss McMullen's health is a consequence of the initial condition she came in with," the doctor said. "Had the patient not have had a perforated ulcer, they wouldn't have been in the hospital in the first place." Okay, so are you getting this? It's Charlie's fault for being in the hospital in the first place. I think what the doctor meant to say was, had someone cared enough to wash their hands, Miss McMullen might still be alive today. That's the dirty little secret behind hospital-acquired infections, and nobody wants to admit they have a problem. Deadly infections like the ones that killed Charlie McMullen and my mother-in-law can be transmitted through feces and food, as well as spores left on untreated surfaces of exam tables, x-ray equipment, wheelchairs, stretchers, even the bedside table in your hospital room, or that blood pressure cuff that goes from room to room, or the one that's in your room. But negligent healthcare workers transmit most of them. And that could simply be fixed by properly washing their hands before and after they touch a patient, or washing their hands before and after they take anything from a patient or give anything to a patient. That could greatly reduce the risk. But what's the incentive if the hospital or nursing home isn't required to report an outbreak? California does not track deaths from hospital-acquired infections. And unlike two dozen other states, California does not require hospitals to report instances when a rare lethal superbug infects patients. And right now, nationally, there are no regulations that require nursing homes and rehab centers to report them at all. Infections like these can kill a patient in a matter of hours, as it did Peggy Lillis, a 56-year-old Brooklyn kindergarten teacher. In 2010, Lillis contracted a bacterial infection known as Clostridium difficile, following just a routine root canal after she was prescribed the antibiotic clindamycin to treat an abscess. This is what I want you to know. There's an epidemic going on in our hospitals and nursing homes and rehab facilities, and it's killing the elderly at an accelerated rate. And unless you're, you know, in the healthcare field or you know someone who is, you don't know about it. And you need to be aware of it. And that's why I've chosen to do this little short series on infections, especially those that are most common to hospitals and nursing homes, rehab facilities, as they relate to our aging parents. So first, let's just take a look at how infections start. The human body is surrounded and inhabited by billions of microorganisms. And microorganisms are living organisms that they're so small that you can only see them under a microscope. So most organisms are harmless, or there's even some beneficial ones like the bacteria that normally live in our digestive system that help us digest food. Occasionally, there's a microorganism capable of causing a disease that invades the body. Microorganisms that cause diseases are called pathogens. Diseases caused by pathogens are referred to as infections. Some infectious diseases are contagious, so they can be passed from one person to another or one species to another. They can be transmitted by skin contact, through body fluids, in contaminated food or drinks, or through airborne particles containing the pathogens. Animal or insect bites are another means of transmission. If an insect bites an infected person or animal, that insect can carry the pathogen and pass the disease on by biting another person. Common examples are rabies and impetigo, which are carried by animals, Lyme disease and Rocky Mountain spotted fever, which are carried by ticks, and Zika virus, malaria, and chikungunya, which are carried by mosquitoes. I know the people in New Jersey don't know what chikungunya is. The two most common types of infectious diseases are bacterial infections and viral infections. Disease-causing or pathogenic bacteria, they either attack the body's tissues directly or they cause damage by secreting poisonous substances called toxins into the body. Fortunately, bacterial infections are often curable. Certain bacteria can be killed by drugs we call antibiotics. Other bacterial diseases can be prevented by vaccination. Viruses are the smallest known microorganisms. They're responsible for diseases, you know, as harmless as the common cold and as serious as Ebola. Viruses live and reproduce only within living cells, and only certain cells are susceptible to a specific virus. You can be host to many viruses without suffering any adverse effects, but if enough cells are attacked, you'll become sick. There's no effective medical treatment for most viral infections. Because a virus lives inside a cell, any treatment designed to kill the virus is also likely to harm the cell. Also, there are thousands of different viruses, each one with different properties. So an agent effective against one virus probably will not be effective against another. Although there are vaccinations to protect against some viral diseases, therapy for most viral diseases is limited to treating the symptoms. Our bodies can fight off infections in three ways. First, by preventing the organisms from entering the body. Second, by attacking those that do manage to enter. And third, by inactivating those organisms it cannot kill. So sometimes, too, the body fights disease by developing defense symptoms, like fever is one example. So when you get sick, the body's temperature regulator may respond to the illness by raising the body's temperature. Some researchers believe that that's an effective response because the microorganisms causing the disease may not be able to survive the higher body temperature. The skin is the first barrier that guards the underlying tissues of the body. Where there are natural openings in the skin, there's also defenses. For example, the tear glands in the eyes secrete and bathe the eyes with fluid that contains bacteria-fighting components. The salivary glands in the mouth and the tonsils in the throat help prevent pathogens from attacking the mouth and the throat. Many openings, as well as internal passages in the body, are lined with mucous membranes. These delicate layers produce mucus, which is a slippery secretion that moistens and protects by repelling or trapping pathogens and killing them. Internally, certain body organs fight infections. For example, the liver and the spleen filter out harmful substances from the blood flowing through them. The lining of the stomach produces acids that attack germs in food that has been eaten. And the body's lymph system manufactures white blood cells, which attack and kill invading pathogens. Infectious diseases account for 1/3 of all deaths in people 65 years and older. And those over 65 die from infections 9 times the rate of those adults between 25 and 44 years of age. Pneumonia and influenza combined are the 6th leading cause of death in the United States, and about 90% of those deaths occur in adults 65 years and older. More than 60% of people 65 years and older are admitted to hospitals because of pneumonia, at a cost of over $1 billion in annual Medicare expenditures. And urinary tract infections, which are really common in the elderly, are the most common cause of bacteremia in older adults. Bacteremia, it's the medical term for when bacteria enters the bloodstream. It's also called sepsis. So you can see why this series on infections is really important. I really care about the elderly, your parents, and this is a big problem in healthcare. And this is a problem that you most likely are not familiar with. So I want to bring this to light. In a moment, I want to tell you why your parents are more susceptible to infection. But first, I want to tell you a story. I want to tell you about my friend Katie. Katie is a nurse, and she was attacked on her way home from work. She was totally taken by surprise, and although Katie is only 5 feet tall and 106 pounds, she was easily able to drop her 6'4", 250-pound attacker to his knees and get away unharmed. Katie wasn't just lucky that day. She was prepared. In her pocketbook, a harmless-looking lipstick, which really contained a powerful man-stopping aerosol propellant. It's not like it was in our grandmother's day. Today, just going to and from work or to the mall can have tragic consequences. The FBI says a violent crime is committed every 15 seconds in the United States, and a forcible rape happens every 5 minutes. And chances are, when something happens, no one will be around to help. It looks just like a lipstick, so no one will suspect a thing, which is important since experts say getting the jump on your attacker is all about the element of surprise. Inside this innocent-looking lipstick is the same powerful stuff used by police and the military to disarm even the most powerful armed aggressor. In fact, National Park Rangers use the very same formula that's inside this little lipstick to stop 2,000-pound vicious grizzly bears dead in their tracks. It's like carrying a personal bodyguard with you, in your purse or your pocket. Darkness brings danger. Muggers and rapists use darkness to their advantage. We all know what it's like to be walking at night and hear footsteps coming at us from behind. Who's there? If it's somebody bad, will you be protected? Your life may depend on it. My friend Katie's close call needs to be a wake-up call for all of us, myself included. Pick up a lipstick bodyguard and keep it with you always.
And you know I'm gonna treat you right. You give me fever.
Lipstick Bodyguard. Fear no evil. Get yours today only at lipstickbodyguard.com.
Fever in the morning. I'll fever all through the night.
The American Academy of Family Physicians says that although seniors are more susceptible to infection overall, seniors with dementia or those who are in long-term care, you know, in a nursing home, may be at even greater risk for infection. And why is that? Well, you know, the more sick people you group together, the higher the risk for transmitting disease from person to person. So despite all our advances in antibiotic therapy, infectious diseases are still a major cause of death in the elderly. So what are the factors that contribute to the increased complications in the older people? Well, geriatricians point to comorbid conditions, an increase in the number of invasive procedures performed, and decreased physiological reserves. So what does that mean in English? In other words, the elderly tend to have multiple things wrong with them, and they tend to require more invasive medical procedures, and they're generally weaker and less able to fight off infection than younger adults. So the diagnosis of infection in an older adult is still very challenging in 2017. Yet, the most important thing to remember is early diagnosis and treatment is crucial because of the higher incidence of severe complications and death. So many signs and symptoms of infection that are common in younger adults, like fever and leukocytosis, which is an elevation in the white blood cell count, present less frequently or they don't present at all in the elderly. A change in the mental status or decline in, you know, the way your parent can function may be the only symptom that you may see that may be a sign of infection. So let's talk about fever for a moment. Unlike in babies who can spike a fever from the slightest bit of inflammation, you know, like when they're teething, frail older adults tend to have poor body temperature response. So for this reason, elevations in body temperature of 2 degrees Fahrenheit or 1.1 degrees Celsius from their normal baseline temperature should be considered a significant fever. Fevers higher than 101 degrees Fahrenheit or 38.3 degrees Celsius, that can often indicate severe life-threatening infections in older adults. And geriatricians suggest hospitalization should be considered for these patients. Changes caused by infection in the elderly, they're subtle. Non-specific complaints may be your only indicator. You know, so when your parent says they feel a little out of sorts, it's important not to brush it off as being nothing. It's not uncommon for elderly patients with infections to present with cognitive impairment or a change in their mental status, and that may be their only symptom. Marked delirium occurs in about half of older adults with infections. I remember we had talked about urinary tract infections and that delirium, and, you know, sometimes it's just a simple thing. It's a urinary tract infection, but it presents, you know, as they're delirious. Other common symptoms of infections are lack of appetite, functional decline, which, you know, there's a decrease in their ability to do the basic things that they do every day, bathing, dressing, cooking, or frequent falls is another indicator. Even something, you know, that may seem as innocent as weight loss or something subtle like a slight increase in respiratory rate may be the only sign indicating there's a serious infection brewing. The normal respiratory rate for older adults is 12 to 18 breaths per minute for those living independently. For those in a long-term care facility, it's slightly higher, maybe 16 to 20 breaths per minute. You might say, well, why is that, you know, slightly higher? Well, it may be just anxiety because they're in, you know, a rehab or a nursing home, or it could just be from inactivity. In either case, anything above 25 breaths per minute shows cause for concern. A medical or nursing assessment is essential to identify older adults at higher risk of infection. So it's important for the person caring for your mom or dad to know the signs of an infection and be on the lookout. That's why, you know, you'll hear me talk about a home care agency. They have a visiting nurse who comes out. They have a nurse who does an assessment. So on that assessment, she's doing a baseline temperature, pulse, respirations. She's coming out every 60 days, technically, you know, that's the mark there. The nurse is supposed to come out, but I know, you know, in the case with, you know, MedX Home Care, she comes out more often than that, maybe every 30 days or maybe even sooner. So they're taking those vital signs more often. They see a baseline. Also, we say to you, you know, they're setting up a care plan for the home health aid that's going in your home. Now, people say, well, you know, what is it? They look at that, oh, Oh, bathing, dressing, cooking. If you remember in other episodes, I've talked about, you know, that home health aide is bathing. They're bathing your parent. That's important. Skin infections. They're making sure they're not reusing towels. There's a lot of things going on there that you don't really think about. That home health aide, they get to know your parent. They walk in and they see, you know, that your mom is out of sorts. They report that immediately to the nurse. So there's a lot of things that go on behind the scenes that you're really not even aware of. That home health aide is the eyes and ears of that nurse. That nurse knows what's going on with your parent, and that home health aide knows what's going on. She walks in and she says, you know, Jim, you're not eating. You didn't eat today. Oh, I kind of don't feel right. Well, what's going on? So these are important things that, you know, just hiring someone off the street who says, oh, I can take care of your mom or dad, or someone who you don't know what kind of health records they have. Also, a qualified home care agency, that home health aide is, you know, tested for all kinds of infections. She has to have all kinds of vaccinations and things that you're not even aware of. So there's a lot that goes into that. So I want to just make you realize how important that is. So the next time you're visiting your parent or you talk to your parent every day and they say, ah, I'm kind of feeling out of sorts, don't dismiss it as something that they're just grumpy or it's just a sign of aging. There's a good chance that your parent maybe has an infection and you want to take them to their doctor. So as we've talked about, diagnosing the elderly with an infection can be difficult. Seniors are less likely to have classic symptoms like fever, chills, and vomiting. Instead, they may have atypical symptoms like a subnormal temperature. They may be confused. They may be tired. They may not want to eat or drink. In any case, these subtle signs can be attributed to the normal aging process or ignored until it's too late. So seniors are more susceptible to infection because of multiple chronic illnesses that occur with age. They put extra stress on the body, and the medications for these conditions can block the immune system. Also, the immune system naturally weakens as we grow older. So it's also common for seniors to develop an infection that causes an already existing medical condition to get worse, or in combination with another acute medical problem. So, for instance, a person with congestive heart failure who develops pneumonia. The symptoms of cough, congestion, and shortness of breath are similar and might occur simultaneously, or the onset of pneumonia might trigger an acute attack of congestive heart failure. So how do you know if your parent is developing an infection? The most common sites for infections in older adults are the urinary tract, the respiratory tract, and the skin. So we're going to talk about each of these in detail in the next episode. But for now, here's an overview of what to look for. So you want to look for an acute change in his or her ability to perform day-to-day activities. Subnormal temperature, increased pulse rate, increased respirations, unexplained dehydration, confusion, poor appetite, and finally fatigue with increased aches and pains. For specific infections, you might want to look for these things. So in respiratory infections, you want to look for cough, increased mucus, abdominal pain, headache, chest pain, generalized weakness, or loss of appetite. For urinary infections, that there's a new onset of incontinence. Suddenly, they're not able to hold the urine. Pain with urination, more frequent urination, suprapubic pain, which is pain in the lower abdomen just above the groin area, weakness, blood in the urine, or a darker, more concentrated urine, or there's an offensive odor to the urine, skin infection, redness, warmth, pain, tenderness, or swelling. So if you notice any of these symptoms, call their doctor and take them to the doctor to determine the source of the infection and any other acute medical problems. Do it right away. Don't put it off. Why is this so important? Because the risk of sepsis, which is an overwhelming infection that enters the bloodstream, is higher in the elderly. The longer these types of symptoms go untreated, the more likely the bacteria will find its way into the bloodstream. Another concern is the prevalence of antibiotic-resistant infections. The overuse of antibiotics for viral illnesses and the common cold have caused bacteria to mutate and become resistant to antibiotics that once treated most infections. This is why infectious disease experts caution doctors against prescribing antibiotics for colds. The four super infections that pose a threat are methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, or MRSA. You've probably heard the term MRSA, which drives my husband crazy when people use that term. It's MRSA. Clostridium difficile, C. diff, vancomycin-resistant enterocolitis, which is VRE, and CRE, carbapenem-resistant Enterobacteriaceae, like the type that killed Charlie McMullen. And we'll talk more about these and other infections on the next episode. And my survival tip of the week, do some baking. The smell of baking can make people feel calm and comforted. And if you're making anything with chocolate and peanut butter, oh, bring me some. Okay, so I've talked again too much and we've run out of time. So if this week's show was helpful to you, or you know someone who would be helped by it, please tell them about it. They can subscribe to the show using iTunes. You can find links to the topics we just talked about in the show notes for today's episode, episode 22, at parentsarehardtoraise.org. I'm here to help you, so please tell me if there is something you're struggling with, and I'll try my best to include it in a future show. Email me at diane@parentsarehardtoraise.org. You can also reach me through my website, dianeberardi.com. You can follow me on Facebook at Parents Are Hard to Raise, and I tweet at Jersey Elder Care. Parents Are Hard to Raise is a Counterthink Media production. The music used in this broadcast was managed by Cosmo Music, LLC, New York, New York, under license of Broadcast Music Incorporated. Thank you so much for listening. See you again next week.